Hey, hey. How's it going?
Oh, it's another week. Some more time. More time has passed. More Bravo stuff has happened. I'm excited to talk about this.
I know. Like, I was thinking, we have so much this week. And even shows that aren't on the air yet. Or, like, you know, like, Potomac just wrapped filming its reunion, I believe. Mm-hmm. And we already have a storyline for next season. The right. Grand the Grand Dam's DUI.
Yep. I mean, Karen Huger's always, she's always producing content. I love her. We'll oh, I mean, do we just want to start there with Karen Huger? Just jump in feet first.
We might as well discuss it because she really isn't addressing it.
No. This is the thing that I love about Karen Huger as a housewife. She is one of the quintessential housewives. Mm-hmm. She always brings good shade. She's got good confessionals. She brings good look. She knows how to stir the pot. But she also loves to talk about other people and not herself. Mm-hmm. And she's not exactly the master manipulator that like LVP was or that, you know, Kyle is. But she's pretty, but when she does do it, like we can kind of see what's happening, but she makes it funny. I don't know. You just can't kind of, at least for me, I just can't help but love Karen Huger, except for when she gets a DUI.
Well, I even love when she, not that she got a DUI or endangered any people, but the way that she handles it is classic housewives. I mean, because a traditional housewife, a good one and what they look for, they're judgmental. Mm-hmm. They have strong opinions about others, but they're also, you have to be a little hypocritical.
And hypocritical, sense of superiority, a lack of self-awareness, mm-hmm. 100%. Like that's it. It all is Karen, mm-hmm. Karen Huger and her three-wick candle. Absolutely.
And so if anyone's been living under a rock, Karen Huger was driving her Maserati. They emphasized it was a Maserati. Good for her. And yeah, point is she hit a center divider. She was driving. Okay, the night it happened, the report we got, TMZ, was that she was driving recklessly. So they immediately said she was driving too fast, hit like a center divider, landed in a tree, Maserati's totaled. And then the next morning, TMZ elaborated that she mm-hmm. was hit with a DUI. And then she, mm-hmm. they said she reeked of alcohol, was like kind of slurring her words and bloodshot. Mm-hmm. And she refused field sobriety tests. And she refused to speak to police and asked them to turn their body cams off. So at least mm-hmm. she had like Phaedra, she had a lawyer in her ear, in her mind, yep. her drunken mind, going over what to do. So she yep. wouldn't be breathalyzed. So,
yep.
Yeah.
I love the statement that she gave. Like, can I read it out loud?
Because this is okay, where this is the delusion, and I was talking about.
Exactly, and it's just so perfect. It's so perfect. So whoever wrote this for her is a master, just a master. So here we go. It goes. Thank you for all your prayers and well wishes during this very frightening experience. I am still in shock from last night's incident, but grateful to be alive today. With the passing of my beloved mother, grief comes and goes in waves, and with Mother's Day approaching, it has felt more like a tsunami. Last night, I met a girlfriend for dinner, and we talked and brought up some very emotional, sensitive topics. I was crying on my way home and saw a car headed right for me. I swerved to avoid the head-on collision, hit the divider, then a tree. I'm hurt, bruised up a bit, but I am grateful I am alive. I did receive citations, one of which was unrelated to the incident, which is undesirable. But what was most surprising is that the car that almost hit me just drove away. And that's it.
By the way, I forgot to mention, the cops found alcohol in her car.
They did.
Closed containers, but they found alcohol in her car.
Let's also talk about the fact, like, look, I do not disagree that grief comes and goes in waves. Her mother died, though, in November of 2017. Yeah. So her mother died almost 6.5 years ago. And Mother's Day here in the United States is still a month and a half away.
Yeah.
Like,
so basically all year round is Mother's Day is approaching at some point.
Karen is one of those people that uses real personal, you know, tragedies. Because also what is sad is that she lost her father then a few months later. And that was really sad. And she did. She went through a hard year. And we all know that I say this, that I think if you lose a close family member, whether it's a parent or a sibling, and you're on the show, maybe you should take a season off. She did not. And she had a bad season that season too. But now, girl, no, I don't think so. Like, you can't, like, I don't know. If this had been at Christmas time, I might have given her a little bit, because I might have been like, yeah, your mom just passed in November and it's the holidays, and like, maybe I'll give you a little bit, but no, not on March 20th. I don't think
you,
so.
You guys. As we all know, Flag Day is approaching. Exactly. Betsy Ross was an inspiration to my mother, and it just brings back.
You don't understand how much St. Patrick's Day means to Surrey County, and like how much like it really just brings up a lot of memories for Karen Huger here. So like, it's not just about the luck of the Irish. It is about the Huger clan too. Or no, yeah, not
honestly,
Huger.
But we'll save this for pop culture, which comes out Thursday. But I can kind of, as you were reading Karen's statement, I was picturing her on the bench like Kate Middleton this week. The way that Karen Huger wrote that, issued that statement, that she's almost like she's a victim. She's thanking mm-hmm. people for well wishes they didn't really send her because we all knew she was drunk. And then she blames the other driver who got away that we don't even know.
Who wasn't there, because there was like a guard or something. Like there was like a because she was driving in a residential area. And so also like if she was about to get into a head-on collision, she hit a center divider, so that means that the road is divided for the lanes of traffic. Mm-hmm. So either she's going the wrong way or the other car's coming the wrong way. But as we know, there was no car there. So she thought she maybe saw a car, because we see things when we're drunk. We see and we hear things when we're drunk.
And catch when she closes with the other driver just got away. She's actually taking a dig at the law enforcement who arrested her for drunk driving. Like, they're focusing on the wrong person here. Mm-hmm. I'm a victim of targeting. So,
I mean, look, I think as two white people, we can't really talk about that at all. Like,
No, I didn't even mean that kind of targeting, but she's still managing.
No, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they arrested her for drunk driving. And so basically it is the entire world's fault, except for Karen's. And that's what makes a good housewife.
It is what makes it. Look, she's in good company. I mean, how many housewives do we have that have DUIs or like, you know, who have mugshots now? We have so many. So like, it's not like she's in danger of getting fired. No, she's got a whole storyline that Giselle is going to pounce on this season. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Their friendship comes and goes in waves. And guess what? It's probably going to be gone next season.
Clink, clink.
Actually, I think we should talk about another like recent DUI, which actually was, I think, back in November-ish. Or no, it was earlier than that.
Speaking of housewives with DUIs, it's not just a Potomac problem, because we have news as well on someone down in Orange County.
Mm-hmm. My sorority sister, Shannon Bedore. Shannon Storms Bedore.
That's right. Shannon, this one isn't for a DUI. I mean, what a season for her, by the way. Cameras are up and rolling. We had her DUI, which is how this season kicked off. Yeah. And she also had a very Karen Huger-like response to hers. There was very little responsibility taken. Then, of course, her ex-boyfriend took up with Alexis.
With that Alexis.
Yeah, with Alexis Bellino, who's also filming. And now that same ex-boyfriend, John Jansen, has filed a lawsuit against her to get back the $75,000 he lent her last season or the season two seasons ago, because he said it started in 22, I believe. Mm-hmm. Two seasons ago for the facelift that she's now sporting.
Yeah. I cannot hate a man any more than I hate John Jansen. Like, I think he's like climbing up there with what's his nuts, like who's like the worst house husband ever from New Jersey, whose name I always forget, but he's so terrible. Somebody write it in the comments, like be like, it's that guy, like DM us, be like, it's that guy, Jim something. Wait. Oh God.
Jim Marchese. Like,
yes, Jim Marchese. Yeah, that's it. Oh, he's the worst. But I mean, Alexis, this is the funny thing, is that Alexis Bellino's ex-husband is like one of the second worst house husbands ever. And of course, now Alexis is shacking up with John Jansen. And that thing's going to, I'm waiting. I've got a bag of kettle corn just sitting in a pantry waiting for the moment that they break up and it all just goes nuts. Now, I might have to refresh it because I have a feeling it might take a little longer than I want it to. But anyway, let's go back to the facelift money and the lawsuit. A, she should have just taken out a loan, done some care credit to pay for it, as opposed to borrowing money from your boyfriend. Don't do that. Don't borrow money from your boyfriend. Also, don't loan money to your girlfriend or your friends. B, if you're going to loan money, just say, have the money. Don't expect it back. I'm sorry. Like, unless you're married, like, just, it's a gift. Like, if you're going to do that, it's a gift. Like,
you shouldn't loan money. You should only loan money that you're comfortable never seeing again. Cause there's always,
exactly. Exactly.
One thing I have to point out in her response, I thought she didn't deny that he gave her the money. Mm-hmm. She says that her response has been that she's been trying to work it out through lawyers with him, and she wants to pay him back, but her only condition is they sign a mutual non-disparagement agreement, which is like they can't speak about each other negatively. But he refused and filed a suit instead.
Well, there you go. Yeah. He's playing dirty. Like, look, I mean, I can see Shannon playing dirty too, but I think he's definitely playing. He's using this against her.
But something that pops
He's trying into to embarrass my, her.
But something else that pops into my mind with this is, I wonder why. First of all, he's a piece of garbage. I'm not defending him there. But I think one of the reasons, I'm thinking now from his position, why I wouldn't sign that non-disparagement agreement. His girlfriend's filming on the show. She's essentially saying, I'll pay you back if you sign this document saying you basically can't speak about me. I'm tying your hands on the show if you want your money. So those two are actually, so I think he was like, fine, screw you, I'll make this whole, and your third storyline of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that just occurred to me as I was processing it. She made the payment conditional to something that the repayment conditional.
Yeah, making it conditional on basically taking away 90% of Alexis's storyline.
Yeah.
At least when it comes to them. Because that's what we want to hear. A lot of it is we want to hear Alexis and Shannon trashing each other and trashing John and, you know, or John trashing. Like, that's what we want to hear. So that does take that away, which is smart of Shannon to put in there, but that is smart of John and Alexis to not, like, accept.
I was just walking myself. That wasn't point I had planned to make. As I was walking through talking right now, I was like, oh, it was the Lisa Rinna math meme. I'm like, oh.
Yep.
It all clicked.
It all clicks. Yeah. So, well,
I mean, the other thing too, though, I don't know if Facebook, I saw people on Twitter discussing this, and I don't know the price of them. Some people said $75,000 sounded way too much for a facelift.
No.
But she didn't deny it. There isn't an issue of he said, she said with the money. It's just the terms of the repayment that they're fighting over. And no, I mean, she looks great now. So she got her $75,000 worth. I just want...
Facelifts are expensive. Like, especially good facelifts are expensive. Yeah, good facelifts are expensive. Look, if you want a Vicky Gunvalson facelift, then go cheap. But if you want a good one, like if you want a Sonia Morgan, allegedly Luann de Lesseps one, like that cost a lot of money, like to have it like that good, that you looked refreshed. You know what I mean? That you don't look like you had a facelift. So anywhere from like 75 to 100 grand here in Southern California for a good facelift is on par, I would say. Yeah.
I'm just surprised she didn't. I mean, she's not known to be one of the broker. I get if Gina Kirschenhider had a bar against her shift at Chili's, but I don't know. It's weird that she had to go to him for it, but
I mean, the only thing I can think of is that, granted, I don't know what is real and what is all talk with her a lot of the time when it comes to finances, you know, because she talks a lot about how she's paying for her daughter's college, and now she's got like three kids in college, I think. Mm-hmm. I think all her daughters are off of college now. I'm sure David pays for a lot of it too, but she's contributing to three girls in college. Mm-hmm. She pays for her home too, or at least the mortgage, probably the property taxes on it. You know what I mean? She's paying for that stuff. So she may not just have an extra $75,000 lying around. And then it was like, well, she could have an interest-free loan. What if John offered it to her? Here, I can offer you an interest-free loan for this and da-da-da-da. And then everything went to shit. And so now she's looking back. She's like, I should have taken a 3% loan on my face as opposed to deal with all of this bullshit now. You know what I mean? It just is... hindsight's 2020. So yeah. Anyway, we'll see it play out this season on Orange County.
I have a theory, by the way, with John, that he's going to propose to Alexis at the season finale, the final episode party on camera and like in front of Shannon. Not genuine. Please. I think it will be like a Slade Smiley style. They'll never get married. It's going to be a stunt, but he's riding high right now with like
100%. He's so gross. Oh my God. Ugh. Ugh.
Oh, one fun fact. I don't know how this plays into the lodge, what's going on behind this. I don't know what's happening with filming in Orange County right now, like interpersonal stuff. However, this week, Tamara followed Dawn Gunvalson on Twitter.
Woohoo!
I feel like that has to be some kind of dig at Vicky or Shannon. I'm loving it.
It has to be. It has to be. I mean, although I just wouldn't be surprised if like 2 days after this comes out, she unfollows and blocks Dawn. She's so mercurial that way. Yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh.
When I saw that, I didn't take it as a compliment to myself. I'm like, oh, she must be mad at one of them right now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Team Tamara this week.
Like, let's do this. Oh my gosh. Lord. Okie dokie. Well, should we move up the coast to Beverly Hills, ironically?
I think so.
Oh my goodness. Well, two things. I think first we should address why Nate is not here with us this week. Because Nate saw Kathy and Sutton on Instagram Live from Palm Beach, and he saw that man who was with Sutton. Believe me, he saw it before all of you beautiful listeners who really care about the Nate and Sutton love story. Like, we're sending him the pictures, which, you know, bless all of you. He feels loved. He feels loved and protected by you. And he feels slighted by her. And so he has decided, a la astronaut woman style, to fill his car full of like Gatorade and diapers and drive nonstop to the wonderful state of Florida and down to Palm Beach to rescue his Sutton from the grips of this grifter man, whoever he may be.
He saw that kiss and it was just blind rage.
If he had more hair to lose, he would have lost it.
I was slightly devastated for different reasons because that Instagram Live was at Kathy's Palm Beach birthday party. And I know, I know I get invited. I got to go to her LA one. I know. But, you know, I can't stay away.
You got the intimate birthday party. You got like the family / like really close friends birthday party. And you were not working that birthday party either. You were an invited guest for that party.
Yeah, yeah, I'm a guest. I'm sitting with, yeah. I'm a social media light. No, I'm joking. I'm like, yeah, yeah, no, but so it was heartbreaking for different reasons. But that IG was hilarious. That live, I mean, they were clearly having a fun time. There was ocean spray flowing before yes. they hopped on. They were like, love this one part I loved. It was my favorite, was when they're talking about how beautiful parties, and Sutton's like, well, that's what we do, Kathy. We live in Beverly Hills. And Kathy goes, no, darling, we live in Bel Air. And they start laughing. Because Bel Air arguably
is better than Beverly Hills.
Yeah, yeah. And she let it be, you know, and the way they laughed at it, I was like, mm-hmm. they were just two rich women loving how rich they are.
Yes, basically.
They were cackling at the peasants, and I ate up every second of it.
These are women who have $100 bills in their purse that they use as Kleenexes as opposed to the rest of us, like who actually use Kleenexes.
And there was a dig at the other housewives in there when she said, we mm-hmm. live in Bel Air. We do.
Oh, yeah. That was definitely a dig, even at her sister who lives mm-hmm. in Encino.
They meant Sutton and Kathy. They did not mean the cast of Beverly Hills. They were like, ha ha ha.
Yep.
Let them eat cake. Just not at my birthday. Oh, ha, ha, ha.
Well, one of those Encino dwellers is not happy that she's not coming back. Mm-hmm. Anne Marie, got word today, as she said, that she will not be returning to Beverly Hills. So as people I feel know now, when they are told that they are not being invited back, they are allowed to tell the public however which way they want to.
Mm-hmm.
They're allowed to do that. So Anna Marie put it on her Instagram. And I woke up actually not even to seeing this, but to messages from my friends who work in casting on that show being like, this chick is trying to partially throw casting under the bus for how things went. And they are not happy because, I mean, the first time, it always seems to be like, it's either a casting problem or an editor's problem. I do both things and I agree with them. It's like, screw off. But so this, I'm going to parse a couple of words out and this is what they're upset about. So, and it's just at the beginning, she's like, I just got word that she won't be returning to ROBH. To say that I'm disappointed is an understatement. I never auditioned for this show. The show found me and asked me to be on it out of the blue six weeks after the cast had already started filming. I was thrown into filming 2 weeks later, mid-season. I was very excited about the opportunity. And I thought following exactly what I was instructed to do throughout filming last season was the way the quote-unquote game was played. Listening to what I was instructed to do was my rookie mistake. What I'm disappointed about is that the fans never got to see the real me or even a glimpse of my unique life. Contrary to what is shown on TV, I am not obsessed with the esophagus. LOL. There's more. You can all see it. She still has it up on her Instagram and other socials. But this is the thing. Of course, she didn't audition for Beverly Hills. Nobody auditions for Beverly Hills. There is no audition process. You don't submit something. There's not a casting call that goes out. If you ever see a casting call that looks like it's for Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, A, it's fake, or B, it's for a show that's not Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm.
So she did not. That casting team has to go and find people. They talk to the current cast members. They ask for recommendations and referrals. In fact, that's how most of the Housewives shows work. Although sometimes, like some cities like Salt Lake, they might do a casting. That's how they got Monica. Like that's what happened with Monica. Monica wasn't a referral. She actually came through an audition process.
I remember because Angie K who clarified at the reunion to Monica. Mm-hmm. They came to me. I didn't audition.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's different ones. So it's very interesting that way. Like, so, you know, some people, in a sense, they quote unquote will audition by becoming friends with members of the cast and trying to like get on that way. But there's no audition for Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. So no, she did not audition for this show. There, you are targeted, you're asked about, and you are interviewed. And so then also, it's not like they just found her out of the blue and we're like, oh, you're okay. That's cool. Let's just put you on the show. No, they still interview you. They still interview your husband. They look at your family. They run all these things. They run background checks. They do all this stuff before putting you on the show.
With the how she hops in, saying she hopped in 6 weeks after filming, had she already gone through the interview and screening process before, and she was basically on the sidelines and they tapped her in?
I don't know that for certain,
mm-hmm.
but I have a feeling by things that are kind of not being said by my friends in casting over there, that perhaps that might have been. That she might have been a standby or something.
Yeah,
like
I was
that.
Say, but like an understudy or like.
Yeah, but that's like, not
I just
for
meant
sure.
Like she was probably ready to go. Because mm-hmm. She makes it sound like you said, 6 weeks and they just called and they threw on a camera. I mean, a lot goes like, into it. So
they didn't just like all of a sudden go. I mean, look, she might have started late and I feel that that what she's saying in here is not necessarily untrue. It's just that she is spinning it into a way that she's trying to make work for her while throwing other people under the bus. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you've got to be like, I'm sure they were scrambling because they were trying to like figure out, you know, so if somebody else had been there or something else fell through or something else happened and they're like, oh, okay, well, let's make sure this works. Second of all, because in the second part of her announcement, she was like, she was upset that they didn't see the real her, that they didn't talk about, you know, her mother being sick and ill and all of that stuff. And I go, well, this is another thing. The fans don't know you well enough to care. I hate to say it, but fans mm-hmm. are brutal. And as we see like all the time, they don't care enough about you to really care that your mother is ill and dying as like That's a collective. Right. Like sure. Even if it was your second season, they would care more, but they don't know it. Also, it is your first season and they don't know how it's going to react. So they're not necessarily, the producers aren't necessarily going to, they also don't want to be accused of mining your pain your first season just for ratings or just to give you a storyline. Like what if that's your only storyline is that your mother is ill? Like production doesn't want to be accused of that either.
Yeah. And they're not invested in you enough. We barely met her husband, who also another reason we know mm-hmm. now about her, the allegations against her husband, they were pretty careful to start limiting the appearance of her family life mm-hmm. and she just became a guest at dinner parties, etc. once, because those allegations broke after the season started airing ish so we really like they were trying to steer away from her husband to begin with at that point. And like you said, we don't we weren't invested in her journey enough to bring in her mother and that kind of pain. She wasn't Marisol and Mama Elsa or something. We didn't know her.
And look, maybe it would have been, and I don't know what type of pressure she was under to maybe join the show or whatever, but I don't know, like not being a part of it, in hindsight being 2020, I might have said, look, my mother's ill, I can't do this year. But if you're interested in me next year, then the next year. Because also perhaps her like going after Sutton was, you know, a type of like anger that she has, not really at Sutton, but at all the medical issues that her mother is going through, things like that, all of that. Also, a lot of people feel that she was doing Kyle's dirty work for her. And so, yes, if she's talking about, I did what I thought I was supposed to do. Well, if you're playing, you know, Kyle's puppet, then a lot of people are going to see through that, especially like your first season. So, yeah, I don't know.
That was the thing with her. It was her first season, and she came on. We talk about this a lot on here. She came on too studied. You can't pretend now that new housewives haven't watched the show and they don't know what's going on. But she didn't just come on. She came on with an agenda for women she basically hadn't met. She knew too much and had too strong of opinions about them. And so it's felt forced. She felt prepped, or what's the word? Like you said with Kyle, like she had someone in her ear telling her, here's what you need to do.
I mean, she also came kind of hard for Garcelle too. And I think she underestimated how much of a fan favorite Garcelle is too. Like people love Garcelle. People love Garcelle and Sutton as like a duo of friends as well. So I think sometimes people underestimate how much the fandom, because if you only listen to one group of fandom, then you'll think that, oh, you're in there, but you kind of have to listen to all the fandom. You have to get the temperature of like everybody. And I think she was missing that.
Did you catch that dig? I took it as a dig at Garcelle in her farewell, in her statement announcing her departure, where she said something like she had hoped the show would be an opportunity to show
black love
and a solid family. Let me get the actual family thing. Yeah, because it was a dig at, I took it as a dig at Garcelle.
This is the quote. It was an important mission of mine for the next season to show a solid black family unit and that quote unquote true black love exists even in Beverly Hills.
It was pointing out that Garcelle is divorced, like a broken family. And that was like her final, because those two did not get along. You can see at the reunion, they did not band together in like a sisterhood here. They were on opposing. And that was a final swipe at Garcelle.
Because also like Anna Marie did not back up Garcelle in the you know disagreement that Garcelle had with Dorit over the attack and the unconscious bias.
Right. Anna Marie said, well, where were you when I was being? So
I think it's that. I think it was a dig at her. I think it also was maybe to try to also show because when if people don't know what we're talking about with her husband, Marcellus, he's been accused under the Adult Survivors Act in New York before it expired. He's been accused of sexual assault back in his days at Columbia University. And then him and Anna Marie came out very vehemently denying it, which they have all the right to do. But they were also saying very uncouthly and tastelessly, in my opinion, saying that the accuser was doing it for clout and for money. And it was just, so I also think in some ways, like being showing a solid black family and true black love was also kind of a dig at that woman as well, of like, you can't break us. Fine if he can't break, like, that's fine. Like, we don't need to take everybody. Anyway, but yeah, I agree. She's passive aggressive like that. She's just a passive aggressive person, in my opinion. Coming from a passive aggressive person, she's a passive aggressive person.
It's a little too much. As I say, the whole concept of housewives and everything is passive aggression, but she was a little too much. Ease us into it. Second season, she should, because the ideal arc is they build you up and tear you down. She came in on a bad note. There's nowhere to go from there. You come in like Kathy, first season, hunky dory, the world loves you. And then you get Sprinter Van. She came right for Sutton's esophagus.
Yup.
It did not. Came in too strong.
Yup. Oh my gosh. Well, I think that, oh shit, I lost my train of thought. Actually, with that loss of train of thought, maybe we should move on to a nice little break for ads so we can make some money so we can buy our own facelifts.
Hey guys, it's Jen, and I host the Beauty Pop podcast along with Victoria Keelan. And if you haven't been listening to Beauty Pop, well, you've been missing a lot. Check it out.
Here's my next hack. You may think it's a little cringe, but I've done it and it works. If you don't have powder for your face and you're getting a little shiny and you don't have any blotting papers,
I know where you're
what's
going.
In the bathroom that's the same material as a blotting paper.
You can use your seat cover for the toilet.
Yep. It is the exact same material.
So if you're looking for product reviews, makeup tips, some pop culture news, be sure to follow the Beauty Pop podcast. New episodes drop every single Thursday, and you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite shows.
Well, now that we have our heads on straight, or at least I do, let's talk Pump Rules.
Yeah. Pump Rules. It's funny because Pump Rules and The Valley premiered this week, and especially this episode, they're so kind of like intertwined. I guess we should start with Pump Rules. Mm-hmm. We've had a lot of news from them this week.
Yeah. Even breaking today before we came on, before we decided to record.
I guess we should start there because it's positive news. That's good.
Yeah.
Ariana has purchased her own home. She bought a house in the Hollywood Hills, 1.6 mil, like modern, cool, not a family-sized McMansion in the middle of the valley.
Actually, it's not modern. It's mid-century modern. Mm-hmm. It's built in 1962, I believe, and they remodeled it. So it's kind of got, it's got modern touches, but it also has got those like old, it's got that nice, mid-century. It's up in the hills. It's right above Outpost Estates. It's actually near, when I was like looking at the views from it, I was like, oh, that's near me. I was like, I'm pretty sure that's near me. And I was like, yep. It's where it is. So, yep. And good for her. Now people can stop speculating about why she won't move out. And then they can now start speculating about where she got all the money. So I don't care.
Oh, I can tell you about the money. So,
do it.
Leave it to me. So she paid 1.6 mil for it. And I checked, there's a $1.3 million mortgage on it, which means that she put down $300,000, a nice chunk of money, $300,000 down, and she has a mortgage for so she still owes 1.3 on the house. She didn't pay cash for it, but she put down a nice down payment. Now, with the other house pending, whenever they sort that out, the Sandoval house, the fair market rate, the number that's been thrown around, is that $3 million? Like he quoted her, she quoted it saying it's fair. It is real. That's not, I had trouble grasping like $3 million in Valley Village. Valley Village isn't like a cool area. It's not like a prestige address.
Also, so they're up by Burbank Boulevard. Like you're north of Chandler even. Like,
yeah.
And I know that doesn't mean a lot to people who don't live in Los Angeles, but I was like, I will never live north of Chandler Boulevard. Like,
yeah, this isn't like Kyle's Valley. I mean, it's just like, it's not a bad area at all, but $3 million for a regular neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Anyways, so at 3 million, Tom and Ariana still owe 1.5 million on that house. Which means if it does sell for the 3 million, it's actually good for Ariana. She could walk away with 750,000 cash from the house. That would be her share of the equity and profit. So once she settles her Scandoval house, she'll clear 750,000 from that, which then she could apply to the 1.3 mil she has left on her new house. She could walk away owning more than half the home in a matter of months now, depending on when they sell, if she lets him buy him out or if they put it on the market. Either way, the point is she's actually in a pretty solid, I have to say, she's in a pretty solid position. When she settles the house with Sandoval, she'll only owe like less than 600,000 on her brand new, on her new bachelorette pad, which that's is very good. Manageable on her income. It's about 4,000 a month mortgage. And given all the deals and everything she's being put down for, but honestly, it's making a lot of bang. She could own this house outright very soon.
That would be smart.
Yeah. Nice. So this is honestly like when I dug into the, because I was like, how that she said she couldn't get an apartment to move out from Sandoval, and suddenly she bought this house. But then I looked into the numbers. I was like, I don't know where Sandoval is going to move. I don't know how great he actually is with money, but she, it may have paid off for her to like take this slowly and strategically.
I'm all about that. Like, especially as somebody who, when they broke up with their live-in boyfriend, and I lived in a house in Valley Village. We rented a house in Valley Village. Like, I was south of where they live, though. I was south of Chandler. So, but
closer to the action.
But in that neighborhood, though, like I was like, I know where these houses are. I made some rash decisions that hurt me financially after that breakup, you know? And so I'm happy that she took her time, even though she's taking her lumps on social media from people. Like, it's good that she took her time, even in this economy, like that she did that. So I think that's smart of her, however. So I hope it does work out for her, because also like something about her isn't open yet. And I'm just
Yeah. I mean, this house might be the best thing to ever, because they paid two for the Valley Village house. It's now worth three. So technically if she put down 250, I believe she put down 250 as the down payment for that one. And then she'll have a $500,000 profit. She can come out solid.
Yeah. I mean, I do worry a little bit about them getting something about her started.
Like, I don't think we're ever.
And it's sad because I really support them, and especially getting it like doing better than like Schwartz and Sandy's. But I think what they're running up against stuff that like, unlike Schwartz and Sandy's where Tom and Tom kind of got in their own way. I think the city of West Hollywood is getting in their way with so many of these permits and stuff. That's why it's just so hard to operate. Like, as much as I love West Hollywood and I love a lot of stuff about California, there are some things I need to go, oh God, this is why people hate it. This is why people talk about it. And one thing though, too, is that West Hollywood recently raised the minimum wage to $19.08 per hour, which is good for like larger companies. But if you're a small independent business, that's really tough to manage. And especially if you're like a sandwich shop, and if they don't serve liquor. So if they're trying to serve liquor, then they're going to try to get a liquor license. So that takes a lot of time, unless you can get something grandfathered in, things like that. It's a little crazy. So I do worry that they may never get it opened, at least there. Like, if they had decided to do it like Jax did in the Valley, like they would get it open faster.
Also, like, I never understood why they opened the sandwich shop. Like, I just think that was not the concept to go with. Like, the bars are like universe, you know, it's a show about bars. So all the guys, I guess it was Jax, Tom, and Tom, they went with bars. It's not like sandwiches were a big part of their lives or their show. They pumped a lot of money into what could have been a food truck. It's a food truck concept. Yeah, and here they poured in hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. That's where I'm like, they could have done a pop-up, something. Yeah. I don't know. I think that I don't see the sandwich shop opening.
I feel like they got hoodwinked into a location by by Lisa. Maybe hoodwinked isn't like the right term, but this is just my opinion. Because I think like a sandwich shop type of place isn't necessarily a bad concept. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but in Studio City, on Tahunga Avenue, there's a place called Aroma Cafe. And it's amazing. It's a great place. It's like an old house and it's been around for like years. It is open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And it is like
the Israeli cafe?
No, it's a different one.
Oh, okay. Because there's a different aroma that I got. Yeah.
No, it's different than that local chain aroma. This is an independent aroma. And they've got seating outside and you go in and you order. I mean, there's a line outside of there pretty much every single day. The food is good. It's nice. They don't serve any alcohol. You know, it's coffee, tea. They've got tons of desserts, sandwiches, breakfast burritos, things like that, salads, all that stuff. That could be a big business boom for you, but you got to be in the right location. Like, and so I think in some ways it's like, oh, West Hollywood's a good location and that location's good for foot traffic, touristy foot traffic. But I also think because also like think about Jones on Third. Like that's quote unquote like a sandwich shop. Like that's a Nancy Myers-esque like type of like
I had it last shop. Week. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very,
but I mean, and that's good. True. And like Olive and Thyme and like things like that, those can do well, like high end ones. I just feel like maybe, who knows? Anyway,
I just don't think it was the best idea to pour your life savings into. That's all I'm saying. I mean, they put a lot of money into the overhead before ever getting in. They had a chef and renovations. Yeah. It was a very Vanderpump scale undertaking, but not on a Vanderpump budget. It was a Vanderpump undertaking on a server budget. And I would have put my money elsewhere.
Yep. I noted something because I was rewatching this week's episode. And I noted that Sheena lied about Dancing with the Stars because an episode or two ago when she talked about how she found out about Dancing with the Stars, she said that Daniel had picked her up or she had picked up Daniel from the airport and they were waiting and that Ariana wasn't there with her because she had to be – Ariana wasn't there because of the announcement. Sheena, what announcement? Daniel, Dancing with the Stars. Sheena, shocked. Oh my gosh, what? She tells this like to Lala. She tells it to Lisa as well. But then in this episode here, this past week, when she's talking to Ariana and they're having a heart to heart about why she's upset, And Ariana's listening and, you know, and is trying to be a good friend. She's just like, she says, you know, I'd rather not find out via Instagram that you're going to be on Dancing with the Stars. And I was like, hold up. So which was it? How did you find out? Like, has something been left out of the conversation or are you like twisting it and changing it to make it sound more dramatic one way or the other? I don't know. But like, there's an inconsistency there that personally I would love to have cleared up, but I don't really give a shit.
That's what the reunion's for. Yeah.
I was like, okay, excuse me. Tell me, let's go through this. Let's walk us through the contrived reasons of like how you found out from Instagram and Daniel at the same time. Like, let's find out.
I actually appreciate, because you guys know I vacillate with Ariana. It's not that I support Tom at all. It's just I've never really been a fan of Ariana. So I'm always going to be so like I have no allegiance in this show. So I don't really care. So I'm going to pick at everyone. But when Ariana explained, I couldn't tell you I signed an NDA. I was like, thank you. That was all we needed to know. My problem has been sometimes it's just very, like, she's like, you can be his friend, but I won't be. There's like no explanation. There's just a condescending smirk. This time, I was like, yeah, no, that totally makes sense. Her story, Ariana's story adds up here, and the other people should know better being in the business. And they're reaching for a story. Like, Sheena's reaching to make this about her. How is Sheena not involved in a sandwich shop called Something About Her? Something About Me.
Something About Me.
Yeah. Oh my God. No. But you know, that was a valid defense that Ariana had.
Yeah, when Ariana said to Lisa, she was like, what am I supposed to tell her and like break my NDA? And you could even kind of see Lisa go, oh. And I was like, Lisa, you've been on the show. You know this. So it's like, no. And in that conversation between Ariana and Sheena, there also was something of like, again, it was going back to how tough it's been for Sheena to like lose her friend and stuff. And she's like, it just, you know, God damn it. I should have written it down. But again, it was just something where it's like about how tough it was for her and how she, you know, Ariana should understand that. And I was like, girl, again, this is only like 4 months after this. And this is like, your friend is still going through like the throes of a 10-year breakup, like a 10-year relationship breakup. Like, just shut up. I mean, sometimes I have to remind myself when I'm watching the show, they've only been broken up for about 4 or 5 months at this point. Like, it's not very long. So I, you know, because, you know, I check myself too. Speaking of checking myself, I had to check myself and rewatch a couple of times that fucking super sexy singles pool party, which I love that Ariana called it that because I was like, yes, that's what it feels like.
At the, I was going to call it Tom's house, but yeah, Tom's party at their house.
There was a girl there who was making drinks, and then it was like Tom's friend, and I was like looking at this orange haired girl, and I was like, what the fuck? And then they said her name, Jessica, Tom's friend. I was like, oh my God, Jessica! I know Jessica. We used to do improv together at Upright Citizens Brigade.
This is such an LA story.
Such an LA story, yeah.
Drinks on Vanderpump Rules was my classmate at improv at UBC. Perfect.
UCB,
UCB.
But this is the thing, though, is that I was like, I didn't really realize. Well, this is the thing. They put her as Tom's friend. And I got a little upset. I was like, Jessica, what the fuck are you doing? You're so not a clout chaser type of person. Like, she's a person. She loves birds. People who love birds usually are not clout chasers. Like, I'm sorry. Bird people, like, tend not to be clout chasers. Like, she's not a clout chaser. Bless her heart. She's not. And so I was like, what is she doing hanging out with Tom and, like, making drinks at his place? Like, what is going on? But then I also noticed, I was like, she's not in the pool later on, but she's also pasty white like me, so I kind of also get that too. And it wasn't until you said something and then you sent the TikTok that she made, and you have to explain it to people.
Oh, yeah. So this girl, Jessica, as a TikTok out, the way they labeled her, she started getting hit up. Like, her mom was so proud. You're on national TV. You're Tom's friend. And she's like, friend? I was hired as the bartender for his party. By the way, he never paid me. His sexy single friends, I think, were like, he drew them in like, hey, like, I don't think he has friends to be that many, to be honest. And so, but her story was that he hired her to be a bartender for the episode and he never paid her. And then also she subbed in for a day for his assistant Anna once and he never paid her. So I don't know if this was a 2-in-1 invoice that he just ignored. Or why, if he didn't pay her for one, why did she go back for the other? But he was, this is so sad. He was hiring people to be his friends on TV and then he couldn't even pay them.
Right? And she probably got like didn't even get paid by production, to be honest. She probably just had to sign a waiver because he was like, oh, I'm going to pay you for being on this so you don't need to like worry about the way paid for the show.
The way she explained it, this wasn't production. This wasn't, this was Tom, his own personally doing. Hiring her. Yeah.
And I just was like, I was like, woof. Well, I'm glad that you're not friends with Tom. I'm pissed that he didn't pay her twice. You don't. Also, what a fucking asshole too. You were a bartender for how many fucking years? And then you don't pay a bartender that you hire? Again, we see what a sleazy asshole he is. Like, oh, what were you doing? Too busy buying batteries and toilet paper? No, you weren't. No, you weren't. Anne was. Anne was buying your toilet paper and your batteries. Anne is cleaning up after you, after the party. That mess that he made, that he, when he was like, yeah, you know, it's just, I just leave a little, like, whatever I can't get, Anne gets. No. Anne not only does the physical labor, but the emotional labor as well, yeah. Like cleaning up after that man. Like, ugh.
That is not all in a, I was torn about that because I'm like, well, assistants kind of just do whatever's thrown at them. They pitch in a little. Not a full scale 24/7 housekeeper, mother, nanny, assistant. No. That is, and we know his pay scale. No. It's just not. I actually was like, especially when I thought about that mess, it's her job. What her job is then is to call a cleaning crew on his dime to come in.
Yes.
She coordinates and organizes that. It is not her job to pick up all that stuff and clean up after. No.
Absolutely fucking not. And especially when he has time to journal and cry, and I'm using crying in quotes, in his room over Rachel, pining away from her, when we're all just kind of like, excuse me, you're so upset about a 7-month long relationship when you really should be upset about the demise of your 10-year long one. Now look, I'll say this. The relationship with Ariana was not going well, obviously. You know, now I think we can all like agree on that fact that like obviously like things weren't the greatest between the two of them. But it didn't look like they were going to try to like ruin it through affair. Do you know what I mean? Like there's still like he's more upset about Rachel about this than 10 years of like that and 10 years of like, well, what did I do? And what did I do to myself and to my friendships and to this? It's more like, why is everybody piling on me? And why won't she talk to me? And she blocked me and she's saying this and
do you think as a narcissist, that's why he's focused on Raquel and hurt most by it? Because she's the one who rejected him?
Yes, 100%. Yeah, because that no contact is driving him nuts. The fact that like that supply is gone from him, like, because I'm sure she just looked up to him. She gave him what he wanted. She listened to him. She took it for him. And so obviously like he was very upset when he said that he couldn't believe that the people from her family and from the center that she was at, the rehab center, disagreed with the advice that he was giving her. And you could tell how angry he was about that. Like, how dare they contradict me to her? No, if you really cared about her getting better, you'd be like, yeah, like, then we need time apart. Like, this is, I want you to get well. Like,
yeah. Oh. No, it's that he lost control over her.
And he doesn't have control over Ariana, which I don't think I think his, you know, control over Ariana was tenuous at best. He probably lost it quite a while ago. And that's when their relationship went downhill. You know what I mean? When he couldn't control her anymore. He was like, oh, this isn't going well. And there'd be like times when he could, but then it wasn't happening. So yeah.
Yeah. And she didn't like do a lot of dirty work for him, Ariana, but in her loyalty or his control, she stayed quiet and quietly supportive of him, but she wasn't like an attack dog. She wasn't Anne Marie going out on behalf of Kyle to fight Sandoval's things, but she wouldn't hear a bad word about him. She would stand mm-hmm. by him. And
because also when you live with somebody like that and you're in a relationship with that, like when, if you, the hell that you have to deal with behind closed doors when you've either stood up for yourself or for whatever's right, like you can love your partner, but they can be wrong about something and you can be like, look, I don't agree with you. Like you're really wrong mm-hmm. about this. The hell that you can get is sometimes just not worth it. And there's a lot of times, especially Sandoval was saying, you know, that Ariana was hiding things and that she was hiding this stuff from the relationship. And I'm not saying that she wasn't, maybe she was, but also maybe he was wanting her to hide it too and saying, we can't talk about this. I've mm-hmm. got this image to uphold. We have this image to uphold. And then also maybe she was hiding some stuff because she was embarrassed. I think that happens a lot in relationships, especially emotionally abusive relationships. Mm-hmm. You just, I'm not saying it was emotionally abusive. To me, it looks emotionally abusive, but that's just me. I'm not saying mm-hmm. it was. But a lot of times when things start to go wrong and you're in a friend group that's so incestuous where you're afraid, and this is why I think she doesn't want people talking necessarily or being close friends with her and with Tom, because she doesn't want information passed back and forth mm-hmm. because you feel like you don't have that real trust. I don't blame her. She cannot trust Sheena. She can trust Katie. Katie's not going to go run and accidentally tell Schwartz something that Tom then is going to tell Tom. Like, that's not mm-hmm. going to happen with Katie. That's going to happen with Sheena, though. It could happen with Lala.
Sheena's already – I loved when Ariana called Sheena out, or at least in her confessional, when she was like, you're going to be friends with him in a few years, maybe. It mm-hmm. sounds like you already are. Like mm-hmm. no, Sheena is I don't know, I was gonna say this season Lala is the voice of production.
Yeah.
I was gonna say Sheena is, because she's the go-between, but she does more damage than good to these causes. So you just really can't trust her, because she'll go with like a puppy, a hungry puppy, whoever's mm-hmm. nice to her and closest. So no, you can't trust her.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she's the poster girl for pick me's. So the Valley also premiered this week, and the show The Valley, not just the place The Valley. So but we're not going to go too much into it because it kind of is your basic beginning episode of like setting up, like, you know, that transition from, you know, Pump Rules into The Valley, and then meeting all the new characters and people there. And I just think it's going to get a little bit more interesting, like the next episode. And as we dive deeper into it, I'm kind of excited to see Kristen back.
Kristen's the reason excited. I'm watching.
Yeah.
Two things. The Valley, hashtag mm-hmm. great 1-8. And the second is Kristen, my chaotic queen, my toxic princess.
She's not smoking anymore, though. She's trying to get pregnant. That's disappointing.
I know. I don't want to see. One of the reasons I love her is I hate to see her grow. I hate to see her become a better person.
I don't know if we'll see. Well, I mean, we'll see. I think she has grown, which is great, but she's still at her core the same person. Like, especially like watching how badly she wants to have a baby with a guy she's barely been dating. And I'm just like,
not even in the same time zone.
I'm just like, just do it Lala style. Come on. I respect Lala for the way that Lala's doing it with her second baby. I'm just like, do it Lala style. If Lala can do it that way, Kristen, come on. But anyway, I think we'll talk more about it next week, because I think there'll just be more to talk about. I think we'll
dedicate this was very more time expository. It was an intro, each a little seg. So we're sure they'll start feasting on each other's souls next week, and that's when we can really dig in.
Well, I will say there is that one couple. It is, I think it's Jesse and Michelle. Is that who mm-hmm. it is? They who do not live in the Valley. They live over on my side. And quick he's fun a fact. Dick. Yeah.
Quick fun facts about him. He started as a realtor. He's a realtor, Jesse. He started as a realtor at Hilton Highland. Now he works with the Beverly Estates. This is very Umansky, million-dollar listing style. But the second thing I had to catch about that, when he said he would not live near them in the valley, he lives behind Chateau Marmont, which he does. And he says, my house reeks of ambition. Hashtag, I looked up the house and it's not his house, it's a rental. So,
oh, Jesse Lally.
According to the most recent documents, it's not his wife, it's not his or his wife's. So, just want to say that. So much for him. But what he reminds me of is the look. And the attitude, I forget the actor's name in real life, but Mr. Sterling on, he's been on Watch What Happens Live. Sterling from Mad Men.
Oh, it's right there. Oh my gosh. Who's in Sex and the City? Who's the pee on me guy? Oh my gosh.
Let's get that name before we cut out, because otherwise it will. Roger Sterling, played by John Slattery.
There you go.
John Slattery. Go. That was the first thing that caught me about him.
He looks at, he looks like a more asshole-y version of John Slattery. Yeah.
Yeah. Same energy, especially in character.
The haircut.
That
couple already, you could just tell, I was just like, ooh, there was already vibes of like, he doesn't help out with anything, and you could just, I was like, this is gonna be fun.
They're technically supposed to be a business real estate partners, work together,
him and his wife.
But it's clear that she got stuck with a lot of him. Yeah. Rightfully so.
I don't think he likes her either. I don't think they like each other. These are two people who did not have those important conversations before they got married.
Well, you know what another important conversation is to have? And that is with your friends, families, enemies, realtors, and therapists. Make sure you share with them the Pretty Corrupt podcast. And of course, the best way to do that is just by subscribing. That's right, because of course this is Bravo Breakdown, but on Thursdays we also have PCP Pop Culture. So by subscribing, you will be able to get those little notifications as they drop, with also bonuses and surprises. Of course, rate, review, and follow for Pretty Corrupt Podcast on Instagram and TikTok, and Pretty Corrupt One on Twitter. From there, of course, you could follow all of our chaotic journeys through this pretty corrupt town.
Yep.
So on that note, adios.
Adios. Cause no one can do it like we do it.